Super. Good afternoon. Thank you for coming. My name is Martin Woodward. Martin Woo at Microsoft.com if you want to get hold of me. At Martin Woodward if you want to send me more abuse on Twitter. Got some this morning. Thanks very much. And then I work on a thing called the .NET Foundation, which we'll talk about in a second. I work as well as part of the .NET team in Redmond. So, first of all, thank you very much for coming. Thank you for your time. And also a quick, Alan, who's at my session this morning? Sweet, okay. And a quick thing of thanking you for all these numbers. There we go, blah, blah, blah. Great. So everything's awesome in .NET world, and that's all good. So I work, as I say, on a thing called the .NET Foundation, which is a non-profit separate company that was set up to collaborate and work on .NET open source in a vendor-neutral space. A lot of the projects you know and love from .NET are in the .NET Foundation. Recently, XUnit joined the .NET Foundation. Mono is part of there. .NET Core. Cake came across recently, which was really good. And then we've got more coming on board soon. So, yeah, it's where a lot of the open source projects around .NET kind of collaborate and help and work with each other. It's also where a lot of the companies that have taken critical bets on .NET, where they like to collaborate as well. So Red Hat's an example. JetBrains is obviously with ReSharper, but also Project Rider, which is their cross-platform C# IDE based on top of the IntelliJ. So if you've got Java teams and they know how to use IntelliJ, they can use Project Rider from JetBrains and code in like a modern language, so it's good. And then obviously Microsoft quite involved with .NET still, thankfully. So I still get paid, which is awesome. And Unity doing more and more. People, if your kids are busy playing Pokemon Go, or indeed if you're playing Pokemon Go, that's written in Unity using open source .NET in the back end. It's all good stuff. And recently, Samsung also joined the technical steering group. Samsung are one of the largest manufacturers of ARM chips, and so they're doing a lot of work helping us out with the ARM support for .NET Core. I just wanted to play a short video. It's very quick, so we'll just put this on, and I'm going to stand here really silently.
My name is Alex, and I live in Moscow.
I live in Rome.
I'm from Melbourne, Australia.
And I'm from Houston, Texas.
I live in Tokyo.
I use Linux systems at home, I use Linux systems at work.
I code and test in Linux, I use some of the test frameworks.
I do a lot of work with Linux for my internal customers.
Assist customers in ensuring that their Linux systems are up, accessible, and performing well.
I think it's collaborating with the global community of people.
The power of the community is greater than the sum of all its individual members.
I'm doing all of this at Microsoft in the Azure Linux support team.
I am working as a technical evangelist in Moscow.
And I'm an open source software specialist.
So as you can see, things have changed a little bit lately in Microsoft. We like Linux nowadays. Why do we like Linux? Because we can make money from Linux now. Because we run it on Azure, basically. Yeah, I'm going to get that one tweeted, probably. Never mind. It's with a business model. We have people that love Linux. We have engineers that work in Linux, on Linux, developing for Linux. We have, the guy that drew, the Tux, the penguin for Linux. He works at Microsoft, that guy. So, the investments in Linux are deep nowadays in the company. So it's quite good. We have a hostage to Tux, I guess. There we go. We'll just wait till we see the Borg version of Tux that hit the internet, but anyway. So the journey has been fascinating to watch. I joined the company in 2009, joined through an acquisition, and I did like open sourcey stuff. And I was wondering how I was going to cope joining this massive big company when I came from a startup doing a lot of open source. And the brilliant thing is that the company is kind of completely accidentally changed to how I was working anyway. around me. So it's fantastic. I just carry on doing what I'm doing anyway, and all of a sudden it's the right thing to do at Microsoft now. So brilliant, you know. I'm hopefully not going to get fired anytime soon. After we became a major contributor to the Linux kernel in 2009, we announced .NET for Linux in 2012, which we're going to play with today. We unveiled Visual Studio Code, which we'll have a quick look at as well, for Linux and Mac OS X. We talked about PowerShell, and then recently PowerShell has been open sourced and is available cross-platform using .NET Core. So, yeah, the investments in Linux are pretty amazing. As I say, why? One in three VMs that run in Azure run on Linux, okay? That's why, basically. We want Linux to work great for our customers. We want Linux to work great for us. The faster Linux is in Azure, the more money we make, because we make our systems all run in the cloud and in Azure, and then we charge you a cost. The more efficient we can get our systems to run, the more profit margin there is on that charge we give to you, and then we can pass those profit savings, you know, those cost savings on eventually once we start making money, and then, you know, that's how it works. So this is one of the reasons why Microsoft's investing so much in Linux now, so that we can make it run better on our cloud. But when we make it run better for our cloud, we actually are making Linux run better for everybody. A lot of the performance improvements we do, especially around file systems and I/O, are, you know, help across the board. And the investments are deep, basically. So, you know, blah blah blah, marketing slide. But the stuff that you care about is PowerShell, .NET Core, SQL Server. Hello, this is getting interesting. And obviously Visual Studio Code as well. So these are just the things that you see, the visible things you can see on top of Linux. This is really reinforcing the fact there's a heck of a lot that goes on in the back end to make sure we have a business around Linux, and it's not just skin deep. It goes very deep all the way into the kernel. Okay. Who here is a .NET developer already? Okay, that's everyone. Who here uses Linux already at work? Okay. Yeah, kind of. Who enjoys it? Yeah. Who... So right, of Linux, who has a work where they want you to be deploying to Linux? Is that what motivates? So deploy to Linux rather than develop on Linux. Yeah, deploy to Linux, develop on Linux day to day. Okay, there we go. And then deploy to Linux, which distribution? So Ubuntu, who's deploying to Ubuntu in production? Okay. Red Hat, who deploys to Red Hat? Yeah, that's very typical. And then, I don't know, random Debian, random Fedora, you know, random. There you go, right, okay. It's one of the strange things for .NET developers to kind of get used to is there is a lot of different kernel versions, a lot of different Linuxes around. So when I say Linux, you know, I don't tend to mean one thing. And what's more interesting for somebody like us trying to provide a modern development platform that works across as many of these as we can is that there are lots of different drivers and lots of different things compiled into the kernel. Lots of different things are available on different distributions, and the way that the distributions can be different, the dependencies that we can take. You know, we're used to just going to Windows, and if Windows doesn't do something, then we'll go talk to the Windows team and say, hey, Windows, we want to do this new feature in our development. Can you go build a hypervisor and make it available? And they go, yep, sure, and it's done. You know, it's really easy. That's not how it works with Linux. And so it's been interesting watching the team adapt. As I say, this is the world I came from, so it kind of was all new for me, but it's been interesting to see the .NET team adapt. Not every Linux distribution is the same, as I've mentioned. Here is the Linux distribution timeline, which I know you can all read, so that's just great. And then we'll just go through and we'll just absorb a few of the Linux distributions that we can pick from in day-to-day use. And then the one we want is that one there. No. The one we're going to focus on today, there you go, that's the one we want, is that one there, as you can see. We're going to play with Red Hat Linux a bit today, and I'll explain why. I'll zoom in a bit for you so you can see it. So there's a lot of Linux around. redhatloveslinux.net, it turns out. There you go. There's a nice URL if you want to go to. Every single bank I go talk to, most of the insurance companies I talk to, most of the big enterprises I talk to who want to deploy .NET workloads on Linux all tell me they're running Red Hat Enterprise Linux. It just seems to, it's very, very common distribution in the enterprise. It's not as common in startups and things and people running, hosting companies. But in the enterprise IT, where typically Microsoft do very well, Red Hat is incredibly popular. So, and Red Hat are a great partner with us, helping us bring .NET to Linux. And they're doing helping us with a lot of the work that we're doing. And the technical partnership we have, they are actually part of the technical steering group for .NET and contributing to .NET, which is great to see. The best thing as far as the customer is concerned, if you have a problem with your .NET workload running on Red Hat, you pick up the phone to one person, Red Hat, and say, hey, I've got a problem with my .NET workload, and they fix it. And you don't have to go through lots of different customer support. You don't get bounced between Red Hat and Microsoft. You just go straight to Red Hat and get support the whole way down. Now, unknown to you, there is actually a data center, there's a customer center where we have Red Hat engineers and Microsoft engineers sat next to each other. And then when it goes from, say, level 2 support to level 3, it actually goes to Microsoft, but the people are co-located in the same customer support center, and to make it all smooth and to work as one team. And it's to try and make sure, customers get a really good support experience. That's not to say you can't just pick up the phone to product support at Microsoft and ask for help as well. But if it's things that to do with, kernel drivers and lots of like commands, which I can kind of do, but if it involves any sed or awk, then I'm definitely a bit confused. The Red Hat guys are obviously a lot more experienced there, so they can give you that end-to-end service, which is great. Right, so this is the modern .NET, and we're going to talk a little bit about standard library, if I can hurry up. Oh, I forgot to set my timer off, so I'll make sure I finish on time. Okay, Ryan, if I'm finishing on time, then we'll cover the .NET standard library in more detail, because I didn't get a chance to cover that this morning, and I want to make sure I do give you more. But basically, this is the modern .NET, where .NET Core is the cross-platform framework that you want to be using if you're going to be deploying to Linux. So let me just do this. Make sure I've got a timer running over here instead. Why .NET Core? It's cross-platform, which is why you're here. This is the version of .NET that from Microsoft that runs on Linux. We also have Mono, which you can use. Mono is great for the Android and iOS workloads, based in through Xamarin. That's all based on top of the Mono runtime right now. And that actually shares a lot of the core compiler code now that's all open source in .NET. So a lot of the code is shared. If I go back a slide. A lot of that common infrastructure is shared and is open source between all of the frameworks. But Mono or Xamarin is a slightly different beast. And it's great for the client-side workloads. It's great for actually doing UI as well, cross-platform. .NET Core isn't going to help you do any desktop applications on Linux. That's not what it's for. It's for doing ASP.NET workloads or batch workloads, headless, no GUI workloads. Mono is what you would need if you wanted a desktop client application. But .NET Core is blazingly fast, like stupid crazy fast. The metrics we're seeing from using the Tech and Power benchmark are pretty astounding, and we're working very, very, very hard on that. The point of .NET Core is we want it to be the fastest and the most productive developer framework on the planet. So that's our goal. We're doing really well. I mentioned it this morning, there's one other framework out there right now, the Netty framework, which is beating us at the minute. So, but we're 8 times faster than Node, 3 times faster than Go. And all the trendy things you hear the non-.NET developers talk about, we're faster than all those boys. We just need to be now faster than one other one, which we're going to get to eventually. It's very lightweight. It's very modular. And it also allows you to ship with your framework, which is great for doing Linux installations because it's just It's not an X copy deploy anymore with Linux. You know, it's an RSH, I guess, or a copy to deploy it, or a tarball. There you go. You can deploy it as a zip, tar, whatever. It's all open source, which again, the Linux guys like. We're faster than everybody, apart from one person, which isn't on the slide, because hey, why show those guys? Right. Workloads. The main workloads for .NET Core right now are web or a console application. So a worker job, something which happens in the background. It's not for desktop clients, okay? So sorry, that's not where. Again, you got to understand where the majority of the investment is coming from. Are from companies like Microsoft on .NET Core. It's companies like Microsoft who want to build, want to make it work really well on the server, because that's where their primary motivation is right now. When you deploy a .NET Core application, you can deploy it either using a shared framework, so using the framework off the machine, or you can bring what you need from .NET with you. Bringing what you need with you means that you have complete isolation. So if you're rolling a new version of your service or your application out across a server cluster, then you can upgrade your version of .NET as part of that application version rollout. If something goes wrong, not that it ever would with .NET, obviously, because we're completely flawless, but if, for instance, there was some silly code you wrote, which didn't work with our stuff, well, not that happens, then you could roll back the application, and it would just all be rolled back. You haven't touched the box, yeah? And then you could go back to the .NET version that worked great before for you and your code, and then deploy that if you wanted to. So it gives you a lot more flexibility and a lot more ease of deployment. And then finally, when you're deploying your application, .NET Core works fine. It's bare metal, works fine on the box itself. But you can also deploy using containers. And it's .NET Core has been built from the ground up to work very well with container-based deployment, so Docker. A .NET Core application comes with source code and then a manifest file which describes the application, as I showed this morning. That's, so Hello World looks like the Hello World everyone's seen. It's just C# at the minute. VB and F# are coming. It's just code. You just deploy it. When you're compiling the code, right now you have a thing called a project.json. It tells it what to compile. It tells it what type of application it is. So here we have the version of the application. It tells it that we want the symbols, the PDB files, to be portable, because we had to completely rewrite those when we went to .NET Core. And then what dependencies we want as well. So, for example, on the previous slide there, I had a dependency on JSON.NET, which is brilliant, because Pokemon Go has a dependency on JSON.NET as well, which is just mind-blowing. It made my kids actually understand what I do for a job, which is great. Mostly I just delete email anyway, So there's this. So what's going to happen is, right now, everything in .NET Core world is based around this project.json file, which describes how to build the project. We're moving to when we release the V1 of the tooling, so the command line and the Visual Studio integration, then we're actually going to move to an MS Build-based solution rather than a JSON file for the file. I could go into the full long reason why, but we've only got 45 minutes, so I don't really want to, because you'll just hate me anyway. But sorry, we're going to MS Build. It means the tooling works a lot better. MS Build is now cross-platform and based on top of .NET Core as well, and open source. So once we made those changes, it made this a lot easier for us to do. I'm going to sneeze in a minute, by the way, so I apologize for a really loud sneeze that will come through the microphone at some point. The rest of the time, I'm just going to look like I'm crying. So you'll need to know the command line a lot if you're a Linux hacker. So these are the main commands that you need to know. .NET new, create a project. .NET restore is a NuGet package restore. Pull down all your dependencies onto the local machine, get it ready. .NET build does a compile. And then .NET space, the name of your DLL, is how you run your DLL. So you don't get an .exe file or an .so. You get the DLL, and you tell .NET to run it. Now, there is .NET natives coming at some point in the future, so you will actually be able to do .NET build the name of your program --native and get a actual bit of native code. That's not there right now. It's all running using the JIT, using just-in-time compilation rather than ahead-of-time compilation. So right now, it's using JIT because it's designed for web workloads mainly. Okay, that's enough PowerPoint for now. We're gonna come back to... Right, I'm going to do demos. I'm going to play for a bit. So the first thing I want to play with is... we just announced some Docker tool, the Docker tools for Windows. So this is on their beta channel of Docker. If you go and you see, you've got a new switch to Windows container option if you install Docker on Windows. So in Docker now, Docker always supported Linux containers. It now supports Windows containers. So that's Windows Server 2016 running in a container, or Windows Nano running in the container, so the cut-down version of Windows Server. Now, Windows Server 2016 is Windows Server 2016. You can have the .NET framework in there, you know, the full-fat .NET framework, and deploy that in a container. Now, your container ain't gonna be small if you do that. It's gonna be a big container, so you're gonna pay all the tax of moving it around the network and things, but it is possible to do as of last week. And that's a really good option to think about if you as a company are looking at moving towards Docker containers for deployment, but you're not quite ready to move to ASP.NET yet for some of your applications, or maybe you've got an application you want to port to .NET Core, an ASP.NET Core, but you can't do it yet, then you can still get the benefit of containers today. So, well, as of last week. So that's good to know. But what I'm going to do is, I've got a small sample here. First of all, so if you go up to GitHub on the .NET repository on GitHub, we've put up these samples I'm just going to play with today, so you can go home and play with these. Everything's on GitHub. That's, you know, it's the new way. And then we have a thing in stuck up on the wall in the office for the .NET team. We have a mascot. Every good open source project has to have a mascot. Ours is .NET Bot. It's also like the robot which comments on things like pull requests and moves code around and runs tests and things. It's kind of a thing that helps us. We like bots in Microsoft now, so this is .NET Bot. And you know, if you want, you can go get a t-shirt with .NET Bot and all that sort of stuff. And we even have all this artwork open sourced, and it's all there, it's all available. But one of the things we like to do is, I made the mistake of taking .NET Bot and putting up a whiteboard next to .NET Bot's face, a whiteboard in a speech bubble, and then the team randomly come by late at night and write different things on .NET speech bubble. So you can actually go, I'm not read out the hashtag because I don't really want the audio recording this, but you can go look at a hashtag of stuff that .NET Bot says, shall we say? And, you know, it's quite, it sometimes do amusing things, not very often. But, yeah, there we go. So .NET Bot says stuff to people, as well as beep beep and things like that. So what we've got here is a quick sample application which does exactly that, is a .NET Bot for you, so you can have one locally as a console application. And I just wanted to show you this quickly. Here it is. So here is a file. You know, this is a typical console file. So you can see here, it's just, you know, a main. We run it, and then there's the graphic art in ASCII art because you've got to do some good ASCII art. And then the project.json file. Again, very very simple. So it's version 1, portable, and the only dependency it has is just on .NET Core. It doesn't have any dependencies on JSON.NET or anything like that. I'm just going to dump to the command line for now. So this is basically a shiny hello world is what I'm going to do for you. But I showed hello world to people this morning, so you get a nicer one now. And so if I go to the command line on Windows to begin with, and this actually is how a lot of you guys and girls will be developing, because if you're already used to Visual Studio, but you'll deploy into Linux, what you probably want to do, the best way you can work is actually by using Docker, because then you can be editing in Visual Studio, press F5, and go debug a Docker container running on Linux hosting your .NET application, all on your local machine. And that's absolutely the best way. If you're already used to Visual Studio and already used to that kind of working, then that's absolutely the best environment for you to work in. So, but I'm just going to show you the command line here. So I can do, you know, as I say, .NET restore. I already did this to warm it up earlier. .NET build, and then .NET run. And then there you go. And it says, you know, there's .NET bot, and then hello. And then I can, I don't know, I see .NET run, and then Dutch is easy. You kind of just do, you kind of just say the same thing in English, but with a Dutch accent. There we go. Perfect. Yeah, great. Is that right? Is that spelled right?
Yep.
Hey! Thank you. Don't worry, I'm from England. We voted Brexit. You don't have to put up with us much longer, you know. So the good thing is when you come and visit us, everything's got a lot cheaper nowadays, so never mind. And more expensive for me. Okay. So that's running .NET bot locally. And you can see what I'm doing here in the code. Let me just quickly show you this. I'm actually just dumping out what directory I'm in, just quickly, at the end of the code here. So you can see on, there you go, from C colon source, blah, 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 blah. Yeah? So now what I'm going to do is I'm going to take that and I'm going to do, I always do this, in fact, why don't I just do, rather than you watch me mistype something, I'm going to build this .NET application. I'm going to build it as a Docker image. So I'm going to say docker build .NET app. And then to show you what that's doing, here's the Docker file it's running. And it's basically just taking a .NET image. It's doing a .NET restore, .NET build as a debug mode. And then it's copying over the debug, the DLL, the .NET bot DLL. Okay? So I've built it. And then I'm going to do Docker run, and then rather than .NET run, is it? Docker run .NET app. Let's see if that works. Hey, right. So it's in Dutch for a start, which is awesome. But look now here, the from, because I'm running on a Linux container, the from is now it's running in Linux. So there I am on Windows in the command line doing like, and I'm managing to run things. They're actually running on a Linux container in the back end on my box. Awesome, yeah? So that's .NET on Linux, and it's simple. Now, there are Docker tools for Visual Studio, and I did have an amazing demo where I press F5, and you can debug, and it all magically works. Sadly, the latest beta channel of Docker has a bug, which kind of stops this from working. But it's going to get fixed, and that's the joys of running on the very latest bits. But by the end of the week, it'll be working fine again. So go install the bits and have a play. But apologies, I'm not going to show you that. And anyway, I don't have much time, so that's okay. So what I want to show, that's kind of how a Windows developer would code and run against .NET. What I wanted to show you is the what you know the Linux people would kind of be used to. So if you're a Linux person, you know, this is the sort of thing you're used to. This is Red Hat Enterprise Linux, but you could have Ubuntu or whatever distribution of Linux you want. If I do .NET version, I see I've got .NET already installed on here. If you want to learn how to install .NET, we've got a cheeky little URL you can go to. So if you just go to .NET, and then that'll take you to a nice pretty site, and then you click on .NET Core, and it'll actually give you the download link for your particular platform. So that's how to install it on Linux. Here's how to install it, sorry, Mac. Here's how to install it on Linux. So Linux, here's how to install it on Red Hat. Here's how to install it on Ubuntu. And it's fairly what people are used to, you know, apt-get install .NET and all that sort of stuff, yeah? So it's fairly easy to get hold of. So now I've got .NET. Let's just come in here, and I'm going to go into source. And then I'm going to do make the hello world, cd hello world, and I'm going to do .NET new. So I've created a project, and you see there it's created for me a program CS and a project.json. Again, being a Linux guy, I'm going to use Vim to come in and edit my project, my hello world file. There you go. And then I'm going to do .NET. I'm actually going to just do .NET run, because that's going to do a build and then a run for me. Oh, no, I forgot to do .NET restore, sorry. So I need to go get all my NuGet packages. Boom. And then .NET run. And that's going to do a compile and then a run. Yay! So if you're a Linux dev, this is a natural experience. This feels good. If you're not the biggest fan of Vim or Emacs, and I don't want to get into that war here, because hey, we've only got like 15 minutes left. So if you want to have a graphical interface, then you can. You can. Oops. Hello. Sorry. If you go up to here, look at this. Times have really changed. Here's me on Red Hat Enterprise Linux, clicking on the Visual Studio icon in Linux, which is a bit crazy. So here I am. This is Visual Studio Code. Who's using Visual Studio Code today? Wow, brilliant. Okay, Visual Studio Code's a great editor. It also has really good C# tooling in there. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to open up that Hello World we were just playing with a minute ago. So open up Hello World. So here it is. And again, this is all, I'm running graphical interface. This runs obviously on Windows, runs on Linux, runs on the Mac. And then I'm going to say, yes, please, go do that. That's doing a NuGet package restore for me. Look, we've even got, what do we call that in the end? Code sense, you know what I mean? Like zero, this is mad. Inside of, and then I can come in here, I can do all the same sort of stuff I used to do. I've got IntelliSense. I've got squiggly red underlines, there we go, and then typical me, I don't know if anyone noticed, I have muscle memory from machine to machine, and so on Windows I'm fine, but as soon as I step onto like my Unix machine or my Mac, I did escape then, and I was about to do :X. So there's a Vim joke for the Vim people out there. There we go. Okay. So Control S. There we go. So I've saved it now. And then I'm going to do this. I'm going to do. I'm going to press F5 now. Oh, magic! This is like, and look, it's compiled, and then hopefully it's going to run in a second. I'm in debug mode. There you go. Look at that. Ta-da! That's amazing. So you got all the same kind of rich editing experience that you would expect from a programming language, of like C#. You've got all that rich experience, and there's an F# plugin for Visual Studio Code as well. Yes, question? Can it compile to ARM? The question is, can it compile to ARM? Actually, there is. So the ARM support isn't fully baked. That's what Samsung are helping us with. But yes. So there is what's called a runtime. So let me show you what's the quickest way for me to show you this. So when I've never tried this on this machine, so let's give it a go. It'll probably fail horribly. But if I go to the project.json file, so in here I've got dependencies and stuff. Let's see if this gives me autocomplete. I know it does on Visual Studio. I've not tried it in Visual Studio Code before. Wow, look at this. Runtimes. Woohoo! This is magic. So obviously you want, we're on RHEL. So we'll do RHEL. RHEL. I've got cheat sheet. RHEL 70-x64. Like that. : squiggle squiggle. And then there are runtime configurations. So if you wanted Windows, normal Windows, you would do something like Win10x64:// squiggle squiggle. But there is also, for instance, Windows on ARM, Win10-ARM. Now, if you're asking for Linux on ARM because you want to go do some Raspberry Pi goodness, that's not there quite yet, as I understand, but it's definitely something that people are interested in working on. I'm not sure whereabouts it is. It'll never be, I don't think that will be one, a runtime that's like officially be supported by Microsoft, so you can pick up the phone and call product support and say, hey, my Raspberry Pi, you know, things not working very well anymore, and spend more on your support call than you spent on your entire hardware. But you probably could, you know, have community support. It probably work. It's definitely something we're working towards. But yeah, I'm not sure about the Linux and ARM. And I know it is a runtime configuration that's listed as one of the strings. I just don't know where it is in working yet. So, okay, cool. Great question. Right. So that's a very quick, like, .NET on Linux, it works. When would you use .NET Core? When you want cross-platform? If you want server workloads? When would you use Mono? When you want client-side workloads or Xamarin? Yeah. So I'm going to go and talk about .NET Standard now. I've tried to go through that very quick because your English is better than my American colleague's English. So I'm hoping you've kept up. But if not, then if any questions before I go and talk about .NET Standard 2? Okay, if people got questions at the end, feel free. But I'll jump into .NET Standard 2, and then we'll see if we can get a bit more time at the end for questions if we get a chance. So, okay. So, I talked about this thing called .NET Standard. What's .NET Standard? And we had some interesting questions this morning. One of the reasons why I realize it's confusing is if you go into Visual Studio and you do File New Project, if you want a .NET Standard class library, then you click on Class Library .NET Core, okay? That's not confusing in the slightest, is it? You know. So it turns out that is a .NET Standard class library. And that is a class library that if you write code in that class library, it'll work on .NET Framework, it'll work in .NET Core, and it'll work for Xamarin. It's a bit like Purple class libraries used to be, kind of, but sort of works. And it's a limited API set right now in .NET Standard. It's based on the common overlap between those systems, .NET Core, .NET Framework, and Xamarin. So what we're doing is we're trying to do some work here. So let me just give you the slide version of what I've just said. Okay, there we go. Ta-da! So we're wanting to have .NET Standard, which is an easy way of saying, hey, if I have a library, then I can write it to this API and it'll just work and I'll be able to share it with people. And that's what, as library vendors, as people building business logic inside your company, that's what you want to do so you get maximum reuse of it. There are over 1,800 .NET Standard library components already in NuGet.org, and more are coming every single day. More and more of, you know, the frameworks and the components you use to build your applications are moving towards .NET Standard. And you can run a tool called API Port that'll help you figure out what you need to change to go to that API. Now, there are a couple of constraints at the moment. The API is quite small. And the problem we have, and this, I run into this problem with everybody I work with who's adopting .NET Core, is the top, say, 80% of .NET libraries you use to do most things, they already support .NET Standard, and so you're good. So, you know, XUnit, you know, mocking frameworks, whatever. The problem is everybody always has one that doesn't yet support .NET Core. And it's only like one or two, and quite often it's random bit of code from some vendor somewhere that, you know, but the open source stuff gets updated really quickly. It's often the stuff coming from a commercial vendor that's harder to get updates to. So right now, .NET can't reference, you from a .NET Standard library can't reference another library that was compiled for the .NET framework. Even if that library didn't do anything, even if it was all .NET, it didn't p-invoke some random things on Windows, you know. It was complete .NET code, would work great. Just because they haven't compiled it yet means you can't use it, which is a problem. So after we've shipped V1 of the tooling, so after we've done the MS Build migration, the next thing we're going to go work on is .NET Standard 2. And this increases the API surface area. So basically what we did is looked at the intersection between the .NET framework and Xamarin, so and said, right, well, that's the API surface area we need to have covered in the .NET standard, the intersection between those two. And .NET Core needs to support everything in that intersection as well. So that's the work that's going on right now, ready to support this. There's a lot of work there, a lot of new APIs coming in, and we're trying to do it in a way that doesn't dramatically increase the sizes of things as well. So all good fun. And then the other thing that it does is it brings in an interoperability shim. Best way of describing this is with pictures. So yeah, here are all the APIs that are coming in, lots of stuff. So, you know, all the threading things. There was a few APIs that we knew we were making breaking changes with .NET Core. And so sometimes, occasionally, devs would randomly rename stuff because they never liked the old name. And that was, there wasn't a hugely good reason sometimes. And so for some of those, we're actually putting them back and giving, you know, having a version that's under the old name, so just less code has to change, you know? So we're trying to make it a lot easier to port code to .NET Standard. Right now with .NET Standard 1.1, you can say you can talk to any .NET Standard library from your .NET Standard application or library. And you can also talk to PCLs, portable class libraries. That just works today. What we're going to introduce is a shim with .NET Standard Library 2, so a compatibility layer, which allows you to reference a .NET framework library. Now, how it works under the hood is fairly magic and slightly frightening. We're all grown-ups here. So basically, it kind of mocks MS Core Lib and then like puts a little bit, so it puts like a fake MS Core Lib in the path. And so people who've got that in their compilation path can still kind of see it, but it then routes those calls through into the .NET Core or the Xamarin version of them, rather than go, so almost like a compatibility layer, or almost like a wine, but for MS Core Lib, you know? But at a very, very low level. So now, obviously, if you then go call, well, registry is an interesting example because there's going to be some stuff there, but if you call something that's just blatantly not on the operating system you need, you know, like that's very Windows specific, that happens to be an MS Core Lib, and you call that on a Linux machine or a Mac machine, it's just going to give you an error, a runtime exception, say, sorry, not supported. But in our testing, the vast, you know, when I showed you all those APIs in .NET Standard 2, that covers the vast majority of code we can find on the internet that of what people are actually really calling in real life. So we're hoping you're not going to see that exception very often. We didn't want to do this originally because it felt wrong and it wouldn't work. However, we've been pragmatic and saying, look, let's put this in and at least we unblock people, and then hopefully people will move to .NET Core, you know, and .NET Standard over time. So that's what we do. Okay. Does that make sense? Did I explain it? Okay. Cool. I'm going to do the MS Core Lib thing again. It's great just being able to tell you. It's like normally I have to do manager speak, but no, it's brilliant. Right then. So importantly, what's actually supported by this whole thing? So we have Windows obviously works great. Mac OS X, well, sorry, Mac OS it is now. We've dropped the X now because it's not trendy anymore. So Mac OS, we tend to stick to the fairly latest bleeding edge versions of Mac OS, just because most people use it for development. They're not deploying to Mac OS unless they've got a very pretty looking data center, you know. But the with lots of aluminium. So that's the, so we just tend to stick to what devs are running, and devs tend to run the very latest version because they need the latest version of Xcode. And then on Linux, a bunch of Linuxes that we see people using commonly. And what we're also doing is some work to make it easier for upstream and downstream Linux distributions to take .NET and have it built for their environment. So for instance, Raspbian, whoever was asking the ARM question, and things like that. We're just going to, right now, you need a lot of dependencies to build .NET, and we're just taking those dependencies, trying to get rid of as many of them as we can, and make it so you can build from source very easily. and then that allows us to push it into the upstream Linux distributions, which eventually, over time, means it filters down into the downstream distributions. Other work going on, C# 7, that's kind of important. Got tuples in, which is brilliant, love it. And the Docker support's just going to get better and better, because unfortunately, the Docker talk's going on right now, so sorry you missed that one, but you can watch it on video. But it's going to be really, really, you know, for all of you people who have real jobs and have to have, like, a lockdown desktop and are not allowed server and are not allowed different operating systems to develop on, using containers is going to be really, really good for you. Okay, that's it. Any questions? Oh, hang on. Okay, I finished. Round of applause. Thank you.